Zena, I'll always love you.
Welcome everyone to Zena Nuber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 181. This podcast show is for all the Zena Nuber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So hello and welcome back everyone to XNU. Me, myself, and I, we're doing okay. I greatly enjoyed the little break in service as I did have company here, and I hope everyone enjoyed their Thanksgiving. I enjoyed it myself, and I hope everybody is doing well. We're going to get right into the show because everybody's excited. I've gotten quite a few emails, and thank you everyone for the emails. We're going to be starting a new series or new storyline, so let's get into the show so you can find out what it is. The song snippet that you hear on this week's show, and thanks Vanessa for that, is We Found Love featuring Calvin Harris. So, nice little tune. I've enjoyed it before. So, check it out and buy the CD. All right, the book recommendation this week. Once again, thanks to Vanessa for keeping up for me. And the book recommendation this week is No Rule of Engagement by Tracy Richardson. And it's over at Bella Books. Of course, I'll have a link in my show notes for you. And the description goes, with wounded soldiers all around her, Major Logan Sharp doesn't have time to pamper some photographer from stateside. What spare energy she does have goes to worrying what she'll do when she ships home from Afghanistan. Home, for Logan, the word means nothing. But photographer Jillian Knight is not what she expects, and certainly not what she needs, complicating her last tour. Leaving her partner and daughter at home, Jillian Knight is on assignment in Kandahar to record the heroic work of medical units in war zones. She knows it'll all be rough, but Logan Sharp is dedicated and competent and reassuring. Jillian finds herself looking forward to her encounter with the intriguing military doctor, understanding that by the rules, demeanor is a must for surviving a land where life is cheap. Under the pressures of danger and conflict, the intense feelings of comrades threaten to overwhelm their good sense, but they follow the rules. After a single heart-stopping kiss, they do the only thing they must, say goodbye. Keeping in touch is not part of the plan, but when their paths cross unexpectedly more than a year later, abiding by the rules is something much harder than they ever expected. So that's a story of two unforgettable women trying to figure out the rules for their own lives and their future in Tracy Richardson's romantic novel, A Wartime and Coming Home, on No Rules of Engagement, and I'll have a link on my show notes for you.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
Well, researching out in the World Wide Web, we've got quite a few things going on this one, so we're going to start over at ReneeO'Connor's.net. She's got on her website the KOPN Celebrity Auction Fundraiser over at eBay, and KOPN is a community radio station, so you can check that on out. And then over at the official Lucy Lawless website, Lucy has listed a letter to the government that Sharon's put up on the show, and it says, Dear New Zealand government, I and many other New Zealanders are putting you on notice that your courting deep-sea oil drillers is totally unacceptable to us. Petrobras already has an uncontrollable leak off their own coast, which is spewing filth into their own marine environment. Why are you giving offshore oil companies carte blanche to risk our fisheries, our coastal way of life, our clean green brand, upon which all our premium exports rely? Do you work for them or for us? Your answer, please. Lucy Lawless. And Sharon's got quite a few things on there as well, so you could check that on out. And over at AUSXIP, Mary D's site, AUSXIP has a 15th anniversary giveaway because this year is 15 years online. So you can enter the draw. Go there at AUSXIP to enter. And she's got the latest going on what's going with, you know, reruns of Lucy Lawless or Xena's Warrior Princess on the UK Horror Channel from 8th of December. on Spartacus, on Rizzolian Isles, and all that. So you can check it out. And if anybody's got anything regarding any website, send me an email on those. In this week's movie of the week, we've got Tierra de los Lobos, and that's English translation of Land of the Lobos, and it's about Isabella Lobo and Christina, and I've got a After Ellen review on it, which of course I will link my show notes for you to read. And then basically it's a Western television series set in Spain, where a daughter who out of four is the real tomboy in the 19th century, and she has to learn with her dealing attraction towards women, and in particular a prostitute who unfortunately is actually a regular customer of her father's. So quite an interesting thing, but I'll have a link on the show notes so you can go over, read the review, and then click on the links to actually watch some of the trailers. Well, that is the introduction ring sound for the latest and greatest, well, I would say that, the latest book story that we're going to do on XNU. I want to say thank you to B.L. Miller automatically for her allowing us the use of her story, and it's going to be Charon's Troubles. Now, I don't know if a lot of you have read this story or not. I did, and I found it quite humorous in certain areas, and so I decided to ask her for permission to use on the show, and she kindly agreed. So, of course, I'll have a link on my show notes for you to get over and read it. I will be reading the disclaimers and all the etc's that go with it. So it's called Charon's Troubles by B.L. Miller. Copyright, the characters of Xena, Gabriel, Argo, etc. owned by MCA Universal. I only borrowed them for a little while, no infringements were intended. The rest of the story is mine, and I hold the copyright to it. Do not use any part of the story without my written permission. I may be contacted at an email address. 6. The story contains scenes of two women making love. If this offends you, please don't read my story. There are plenty of other wonderful stories out there. Violence. There are graphic scenes of violence within the story. And for Lunacy and Verda, you two are the best. So, on with the show. Charon's Troubles by B.L. Miller. Sisyphus smiled as he watched Charon's boat ferry across the River Styx, as it had done so many times before, bringing people into the underworld for Hades to judge and to send either the Elysian Fields or Tartarus. The king had long ago found a secret tunnel that led to the edge of the river. He, of course, had been sentenced to the fiery realm because of his attempts to kill Hades' sister, Celesta, not to mention his attempt to overthrow the god of war. Soon his wife, Queen Charis, would be arriving, no doubt judged by Hades, to go to the Elysian Fields. Charis, who betrayed him to Xena, who helped to release Celesta from her trap, and cause his own death. She would go where he could not.
Well, we'll see about that, he grumbled angrily.
The key to entering the underworld was getting across the River Styx, and the only way to do that was by paying the 1 dinar fee to Charon and riding across on his boat. The solution was so simple that Sisyphus couldn't believe he hadn't thought of it before. Charon only allowed passengers to enter the underworld, not leave it. But if someone else controlled the ferry... The former king of Corinth and master magician studied the gnarled-up ferryman carefully. He was key to everything.
All aboard! Have your dinars ready!
Charon said in a bored tone. He took the dinars and put them in his pouch. He never could spend them. There was no place in the underworld in which dinars were of any use. Still, he couldn't allow people to just cross the River Styx without paying something. He had long ago secured a pouch that seemingly held only 4 dinars. Yet whenever those dinars were removed, 4 more appeared. One day in boredom, Charon sat on the riverbank and tried to see how many dinars actually were in his pouch. When the pile grew higher than he was tall, the grotesque-looking ferryman gave up. Suffice it to say that he had more dinars than he could ever hope to spend. He sighed and took another dinar from the newly departed. Day in, day out, shuttling souls across for Hades. At least it was steady work. Charon was exactly what one would expect in one of Hades' henchmen. His face was pale white in stark contrast to the black of his lips, and around his colorless eyes. Long, dark, nappy hair hung down from his forehead. Gnarled fingers gripped the pole that helped push the boat from one side to the other. His back was hunched slightly, giving him a bent-over appearance. The sight of him alone was enough to scare most good people into waiting several days before stepping onto the boat and making the journey to meet Hades. Charon had a bit of mean streak in him and would deliberately scare small children just to see their reaction, much to his master's dismay. The god of the underworld had lost track of how many times he had spoken to Charon about his attitude towards his customers. One moment stepped in the boat and tried to nonchalantly slip in with the crowd.
"Wait a moment there. Where's your dinar?"
I'm afraid we're very poor. My family couldn't afford to send a dinar with me,"
she said apologetically, hoping to appeal to his non-existent good side.
"No dinar, no ride. Go on now. Hunt your family until they give you a dinar. I have paying customers to attend to,"
he said brusquely.
But what if they can never spare dinar for me?"
she said, almost sobbing.
"Then I guess you never get to cross the river now, do you?"
he sneered.
"Now get off my boat."
He chuckled evilly as the now sobbing woman disembarked and a paying customer stepped on.
"Ah, that's a good man. Take a seat."
He pushed against his pole and sent the boat into motion across the murky depths of the river Styx. Charon watched the last customer step off his boat and reached for his pole to make the return trip when he saw Sisyphus step onto his vehicle.
"No passengers,"
he barked.
"Ah, Charon, my good man, how are you today?"
the tall king said as he approached the much smaller ferryman.
"Well, if you really care to know, my corns are aching and my hemorrhoids are acting up again. Do you think Hades will give me a vacation? Even one lousy sick day? No, of course not."
"Just keep the boat moving,"
he says. "Bah! Let him do this day in and day out and see how much he likes it."
"If you'd like a break, I'm sure one can be arranged,"
the gray-haired king said solicitously.
"I'd be happy to take over for you for a day or so until you're feeling better."
"No thanks. Hades would have my head if I left this boat. Besides, what are you doing this far out of Tartarus? Planning on stealing Ares' sword again?"
"Oh no, I never dare do that again. I have a much better goal now."
He opened his hand and flung a powder into Charon's face, blinding the ferryman.
"Like this."
Sisyphus pushed the boat upstream, away from the crowds of people waiting to cross over. He settled on a small inlet and dragged the blinded ferryman behind him. He came upon a wall that appeared to be smoother than the rest, and felt along it until he found the long, hidden switch. As expected, the wall opened to reveal a portal to the overworld of the mortals.
"Out you go,"
he said, shoving the screaming ferryman through the portal. In a flash, Sisyphus closed the wall and sealed it with magic to keep it closed, thus preventing Charon from re-entering.
"Now, Hades, let's see just how powerful you really are,"
the king said menacingly as he climbed back into the boat and returned to the edge of Tartarus. He had a lot of work to do before the god of the underworld discovered what had happened. Xena felt the hoofbeats long before she heard them, and was up with weapons drawn, nudging the bard awake from her space on the opposite side of the fire.
"What?"
Gabrielle said, annoyed that her peaceful dream had been interrupted by her friend.
"We've got company. I thought you might want to be awake,"
the warrior replied, her eyes searching for the first sign of the approaching rider. The bard was on her feet immediately, staff in hand.
"Sounds like a lot of them."
"Two horses, one chariot," Xena said casually.
"Figures you'd know that. Can you tell what color they are, too? Oh, woman of great hearing?"
the bard teased.
"Black."
"How did..." "Oh."
Gabriel got her answer when she saw the horses break through the brush and come to a stop. Argod whinnied and frantically pulled on her reins, trying to break free from the branch where Xena had tethered her.
"You can put your staff down, Gabriel. It won't do you any good,"
the warrior said, sheathing a sword.
"Hello, Hades. What brings you up here to bother us today?"
The god removed his helmet and smiled at the mortals.
"Ah, Xena, how I've missed you."
He stepped off the chariot and walked over to the campfire, settling himself on a log. Xena motioned for Gabriel to sit next to her on the ground on the opposite side.
"What did you need?"
the warrior asked, not at all happy that her sleep was interrupted by the handsome god of the underworld.
"Don't tell me Celeste has been kidnapped again."
"No, it's not something that simple,"
he sighed, running his hand through his dirty blonde hair. The two mortals exchanged worried glances. If he was calling the abduction of his sister trivial, then this was really a large problem.
"It seems that Sisyphus has kicked Charon out of the underworld. Don't ask me how he did it, but I've looked everywhere and can't find him."
"Who's running the ferry?"
Gabriel asked.
"That's the problem. Sisyphus has not only taken control of the boat, but he's figured out a way to get people out of Tartarus. He's transporting them back across the River Styx.
Oh, no. You mean he's letting them back out here? She gave Xena a worried glance.
Worse than that, little storyteller. He's only letting certain ones out. He won't transport the dead over for me to judge, and he's letting out those that have met their death at Xena's hands.
But once they step back here, don't they become mortal again? Can't your sister touch them and send them back? But once they step back here, don't they become mortal again? Can't your sister touch them and send them back? Xena asked.
No. Celesta can only touch them once unless there's a new reason. In other words, they'd have to be killed again for her to take them. Do you have any idea how many men we're talking about? Not to mention the occasional woman.
He shook his head in disbelief.
Even if they were all killed again, without Karen to ferry them across the river, they'd just find their way back out here.
You're a god. You can't find them? The bard asked, trying hard not to think about all the men that would love to get their revenge on their best friend for sending them to Tartarus.
I have no power up here. I can't find him, and the other cards aren't much help either. He's a twisted little version of a man with the most sarcastic mouth I've ever heard. I don't understand why he'd be so hard to find.
He sure would stand out in a crowd. What makes you think we can help? Xena asked, although she already knew the answer.
I'm sure the first thing those people will do once they're free is seek you out for revenge. I need you to kill them again and send them back down, but you also have to find Karen.
So hundreds of angry men are going to be after me, and you want me to look for some stupid little ferryman. Don't forget the women too, Xena. Gabrielle reminded her, drawing an annoyed glare from the warrior.
You're the only one I can turn to,
Hady explained.
I know that you'll come into contact with the released residents of Tartarus, but you're also the only one who could possibly find Terran for me. I'm afraid that once he has a taste of the overworld again, that he won't want to come back, and he may even go into hiding. You need to find him, and fast. The dead souls are piling up on the side of the river, and it won't be much longer before I have to ask Celesta to stop touching them until there's more room. As it is, she's only visiting those who are certain to be sent to Tartarus. I figured there's no harm in letting the good citizens live a while longer. But that can only go on for so long as well. Xena, I really need your help in this,
he pleaded.
Don't forget that I judged Marcus twice, and your judgment is still to come.
Don't hold my afterlife over me, Hades,
the warrior warned.
I'll help you. You don't need to threaten me.
I'm sorry, Xena. I don't mean to be like this, but you have to understand just how important it is that we find Terran soon. I know you're putting yourself in danger, but there really is no other choice.
He stood.
I appreciate what you're going to do, Xena, and I haven't forgotten how you helped Celesta. I will remember all of this when it comes time for your own judgment.
He climbed aboard his chariot, and the back horses took off at a breakneck pace, through the brush, leaving only behind dust in their wake. This isn't good, is it? Gabrielle said as she gripped her staff a little tighter.
Only if you consider having a few hundred of your worst enemies being let loose upon you. Good.
Xena quipped. At the moment a horrid thought came to her. She turned and put a hand on the bard's shoulder.
Gabrielle, I think you should go visit the Amazons or your family for a while. At least until this is over.
She held up her hand to quiet the protest. She knew she was coming.
Some of these people don't know who you are, but some do. They know you're with me, and that makes you a target for them. I can't take the chance that one of them will try to exact revenge on me through you.
You can't take the chance? Xena, we've been through this before. I chose to follow you, and I still choose to do so. I know the risks, she said firmly.
Do you? Gabrielle, there's no telling how many of them have been let out, or how many will find me at once. I'm good, but if there are too many of them, you being there isn't going to make a difference except that it'll guarantee your own death. I don't need that on my conscience.
Oh, and leaving you to face them all alone is supposed to make me feel good?
Her green eyes flashed with barely controlled anger.
Xena, we're friends. We stick by each other. That's what friends do.
Gabrielle, it's just too dangerous. Don't you understand that?
Faces flashed through Xena's mind of those she had killed, and she held genuine fear for her friend's safety. Any number of them would hesitate to cut the bard down if they knew how important she was to the warrior. Xena knew deep inside she'd never survive if anything happened to Gabrielle. Especially if it was because of her.
I just can't walk away, Xena. Don't you understand that? She countered. If you don't let me come with you, then I'll just follow you like I did before. You can't stop me. Please, Xena. It's just too important.
She pleaded, putting all her emotions into her words. Xena walked away and sat down on a log, her gaze centered on the ground.
Gabrielle remained where she was, understanding the warrior's need to have a moment to work things out for herself. Xena picked up a stick and mindlessly drew random patterns in the soft dirt. This was bad. Very bad indeed. It wasn't just a case of the dregs of society being released from TARDIS. It was the dregs that had potential vendettas against her. How could she protect innocent lives, and herself for that matter, while worrying about Gabrielle's safety? She had no doubt that the bard meant what she said about following her. The young woman was nothing if not tenacious about being with her. She continued absolutely digging into the dirt with the stick as every worst possible scenario played out in her mind. And to top it off, she had to find that weasel of Furman, or they would just come back after her again and again, not to mention dealing with Sisyphus. Xena tossed the stick in the fire, frustrated with the hopelessness of the situation. She needed time to think, time to plan, time which wasn't available. The crack of a twig nearby brought her head up and she realized that time had just run out. Xena jumped to her feet and drew her sword, silently pleased that the bard had apparently heard the same sound and was in a defensive stance, staff at the ready.
"Well, well, well, Xena, it seems we meet yet again,"
Toxia sneered.
"Perhaps this time it will be you who gets sent to Tartarus. Don't count on it, dead man."
The warrior growled, her eyes narrowing.
"A little overconfident, aren't we, Xena?"
Her head jerked to the left to see Dagny break through the brush.
"You don't have a village of centaurs at your back to protect you this time."
"Big words for a little man," she retorted, her right hand reaching for a chakram as she meant to calculate the angles needed to take both men out at once. Just as she wrapped her fingers around the edge of the metallic disc, 8 more well-armed men appeared behind Toxius and a dozen behind Dagny. Gabrielle moved closer to the warrior.
"This isn't good, is it?"
"Nope," she whispered. "Not good at all."
"Run?"
"Run!"
Leaving their belongings scattered about the campsite, the two women took off, Gabrielle running past Argo to reach the road, while Xena jerked the horse's reins free of the branch and leapt into the saddle. As she approached the bard, she held out her arm, scooping the smaller woman up behind her.
"Hey-ya!"
Argo took off as if the four horsemen of doom were at her back, leaving behind only a trail of dust for the men to try and follow.
"You can run, but you can't hide, Xena!"
Toxius yelled at the rapidly retreating form.
"We're nothing but a small fraction of the souls looking for your blood. Soon all of Greece will be filled with us, and we'll only have one thing on our minds. Your death!" "Ha ha ha!"
He broke into a sinister laugh that was echoed by his comrades. It was almost 2 candle marks before Xena felt safe enough to stop and let Argo take a short rest. She dismounted and helped Bard down, before leading the horse to a small stream to take a small drink. The warrior turned to see Gabrielle standing there, gingerly rubbing her sore rear.
"Problem?"
she quirked.
"Oh no, Xena. I love bouncing up and down on the edge of Argo's saddle for a couple of candle marks without a break," she said sarcastically.
"You know there are women who do like to bounce up and down on a saddle."
She let the corner of her lip turn up into a grin. Gabrielle looked at her and raised one eyebrow in her best imitation of the warrior's trademark look.
"Xena."
"Well, it's true."
"I'm sure it is, but I'm also sure that they weren't being chased by a bunch of undead killers bent on revenge," she said as she pulled the water skin off the saddle horn and took a long swallow.
"No, their motivations are quite different,"
the warrior quipped, drawing a chuckle from the bard.
"You know, sometimes you are just plain wicked,"
Gabrielle said with a smile as she handed the water skin to her friend.
"I know. It's part of my charm."
She looked around carefully, not wanting to be surprised again.
"I think we could take a break here for a little while. Those men are on foot, and Argo does need a rest."
"She's not the only one,"
the bard said, reaching back to rub her rear again. Xena chuckled and wrapped her arm around the smaller woman's shoulders in a friendly hug.
"I think I saw some berries over there. You can collect them while I walk Argo to cool her down after that hard ride. We'll rest here for a little bit, but then we're going to get going. The sooner you find Karen, the sooner we'll be able to put everything back in order in the underworld."
"Guess that means I get to come along, huh?"
she asked, her green eyes twinkling as she looked up at her friend.
"Like there was ever a choice for me, my little shadow."
Outwardly, the warrior smiled, but inwardly, she was filled with annoying fear that she was making the wrong decision. Karen stumbled aimlessly through the winding hills and valleys until he came upon a small village near the shore. As he drew closer, he saw a group of men huddled near the side of a building, placing bets on the roll of the dice. The smell of stale, unwashed bodies and overabundance of ale permeated his senses.
"Ah, my kind of place,"
he said happily, fingering the dinars in his pouch.
He wormed his way into the group and played for a while before deciding that dice games were too slow for his taste and went off in search of some more interesting action. It wasn't long before he found the tavern.
The largest mug of port you have,
he said to the barkeep, pulling two dinars out of his pouch and laying them on the counter.
And keep it coming. I have a feeling I'll be here a while,
he said as he spotted a group of card players huddled around a corner table.
Definitely my kind of place.
Karen ambled over to the table and sat down in the empty chair.
Deal me in, boys.
You have money?
The dealer asked, his tone indicating that he didn't believe the pasty white man had a dinar to his name.
No, I figured I'd use carrots to bet with,
the ferryman said sarcastically.
Of course I have money.
He turned to look at the man on his right.
Next thing you know, he'll be asking me if I know how to play cards. I wasn't born yesterday. In fact, I celebrated my 651st birthday recently.
The men exchanged glances, certain that they were dealing with a nutcase.
What? You don't believe me?
Doesn't matter what we believe,
the man across the table said.
Put your dinars on the table and you can stay. Otherwise, go away.
What, aren't we the sociable bunch?
Karen tossed coin on the wooden surface.
Deal, boys, I'm feeling lucky today.
The cool, dark night made Zena even more uneasy than before. With untold numbers of people after her blood, the warrior knew that sleep was out of the question. It took a great deal of effort just to convince Gabrielle to try and rest. There was no fire to keep them warm. The danger of it being spotted was too great. Instead, Zena pulled a blanket alongside the bard and curled up against her until the young woman was completely asleep. Only then did she move away and position herself against the trunk of a large tree, Gabrielle in her sight. Zena let her right hand rest against her shoulder, taking comfort in the feel of the cool metal against her fingertips. Her ears were attuned to the sounds of the nightlife in the surrounding forest. She knew without question just how many squirrels, rabbits, and other assorted creatures were roaming about. She left nothing to chance. If it were just her own safety she was worried about, Zena would have curled up and gone to sleep a long time ago, trusting her inner senses to warn her of any danger. This time it was different. She couldn't take the chance of someone keeping her too busy to protect Gabrielle. The bard slept far too soundly to notice if the camp was overrun with the undead until it was too late. No, she would lie awake and maintain her vigil over her sleeping friend. Friend. What an inadequate word to describe what Gabrielle meant to her. Zena wished she possessed a bard's flair for finding just the right words to express how she felt. At one time, the young woman was little more than an annoyance, a stranger. Now Zena couldn't imagine life without her. It pained her deeply to see Gabrielle marry Perdiccas, to be filled with grief after his death, to suffer endless nightmares where she relived his murder over and over. Those nights, all Zena could do was hold the trembling bard and stroke her hair while the tears fell. How she wished at those times that she knew the right words to say to ease her friend's pain, but those words never came. No, she was a fighter, not a comforter. That was Gabrielle's job. She was the only one who knew just the right things to say to make everything seem better. So many times Zena felt herself slipping back into the darkness, only to have the strength of the bard's words and feelings pull her back. Many times the warrior wondered why Gabrielle chose to stay with her. At first Gabrielle thought it was for excitement, for a way out of the boring life of Podidia. But why now? Now the bard was older, more self-assured, a woman, and not a child. Zena looked at the sleeping form again. Yes, definitely a woman. A woman who willingly put herself in danger to be with a former warlord. What do you see in me? She asked the softly snoring bard. What do you see that I don't? I look and I see a murderer who can never atone for all the pain and suffering I've caused. How can you see something different? Gabrielle rolled over and flopped her arm over the empty blanket next to her, sighing in sleepy disappointment. A moment later, Zena heard the most inaudible whimper, followed by the bard curling up into a ball. The warrior recognized it for what it was, another one of Gabrielle's nightmares. She immediately was at the bard's side, wrapping her arms around the smaller woman and whispering nonsense words into her ears. Zena waited for the sounds she usually heard from Gabrielle when she was reliving Perdiccas' death. Words like, "No, Callista!" and "Perdiccas! Look out!" All those words never came. It wasn't long before the warrior realized that this wasn't the bard's usual night terror. This nightmare was new, and with a few short words, she realized just what was scaring Gabrielle so much.
"Zena! Look out! No!"
Gabrielle, I'm here. Shh, it's okay. Shh.
She began a rocking motion that, coupled with her comforting tones, seemed to calm the bard down. And I felt the young woman's body relax against her, and released a deep breath, thinking the worst was over. Usually, when she got Gabriel calmed down, that was it for the night. It wouldn't be the case this time. Within a few moments, the bard was moaning and thrashing about again, repeating Xena's name over and over in such a pained tone that it tore at the warrior's heart. Unable to figure out any other way to help ease her friend's torment, Xena forcibly rolled Gabriel over and pulled her tight against her body. "I'm right here, Gabriel. I'm right here. I'm not hurt. Shh. It's okay." She kissed the bard's forehead while running her hand up and down the young woman's back. With the most heart-wrenching cry that Xena had ever heard, Gabrielle scared herself awake. She forcibly pushed herself away from the strong arms and forced herself into a sitting position. "Gabrielle, it's all right. It was just a bad dream. Everything's fine." Disoriented and frightened, Gabrielle needed to verify that her nightmare wasn't real, that Xena wasn't dead. She reached out and put her hand on the warrior's neck, trying to reconcile the smooth, unbroken skin with the hard vision in her mind. Unsure of what to say or do, Xena lay perfectly still and let the frightened one verify for herself that the sword wounds in her mind's eye weren't real. Gabriel's hand traveled lower, slipping just beneath the edge of the leathers until it rested just above Xena's heart. Her fingers lay flat, feeling the steady heartbeat beneath them. It took several such heartbeats before reality finally overrode the vivid nightmare.
"Oh, Xena!"
she sobbed, throwing her arms around the warrior and burying her head against the crook of the older woman's neck.
"It was so real. It was so, so real."
Her words became muffled, and she gave up all thought of speech, letting her tears roll down to soak Xena's skin. "Okay now, I've got you." She wrapped her arms around Gabriel and held her tight, letting her fingers stroke the golden hair. "I'm all right. I'm not hurt. It's okay." She resumed the earlier rocking motion, while continuing to provide the much-needed comfort. Gabrielle continued to cry until the sobs gave way to hiccups and sniffles. Still, she refused to let go, afraid that what she felt wasn't real and unwilling to take the chance. Xena continued to softly coo and reassure the bard until she felt the breathing slow and deepen. Only when she was certain that Gabrielle was once again asleep did she roll their bodies until the bard was laying on her back. Propped up on one elbow, the warrior used a thumb to wipe away the tears that remained on Gabrielle's cheeks. Xena thought about moving back to her position against a tree, but found herself unable to leave the bard's side. She shifted slightly to get more comfortable, and soon fell asleep. Sometime during the night, Gabrielle rolled over and draped her arm and leg over the warrior, unconsciously needing the physical comfort. In response, the sleeping warrior's arms found their way around the young woman's body, entwining them in a way they both needed but never dared ask for.
"Wimps! You're all a bunch of wimps,"
Karen said as he scooped up his dinars and tossed them into his pouch.
"Why, the sun isn't even up yet, and look at you all, yawning away. Who'd have thought my first day out of the underworld, and I can't even find an all-night card game?"
He banged on the table.
"Barkeep, more port."
"I'm closed,"
the man behind the counter said.
"Take your business up to the Blue Bull if you want. They're open all the time."
"Fine. I'm sure it's much more exciting than this place. Why, even the old ladies would be bored here."
The fireman grumbled as he made his way out.
"Oh, maybe they'll have dancing girls. Haven't seen dancing girls since."
The door closed, saving the bartender from listening to him any longer. Karen's halfway up the street when strong hands grabbed him and pulled him roughly into an alley.
"Demand of your life, old man,"
the owner of Meaty Hands said menacingly.
"Your money or your life? Your money or your life? What's the matter? Can't come up with a more original line?"
He reached in his pouch, then pulled out 4 dinars.
"Here, that's all I have."
The thief took the money and shoved the fireman against the wall.
"Hey, easy with the threads. This robe is pure silk, you know."
"Pure silk, huh?"
"Don't even think about it. You have no idea who I am, do you? I'm Karen, the ferryman from the River Styx,"
he said proudly.
"Yeah, and I'm Hercules. Everyone's a comedian. Look, unless you want to get Hades' bad side, I suggest you let me go. He doesn't take too kindly to people roughing up his help."
"Maybe I should send you to meet him right now,"
the large man threatened.
"Oh yeah, sure. Cut my vacation short, why don't you? I tell you, some people just don't want to let others have a good time. Let me go and I'll give you free passage once your time comes."
I think I'll settle for the robe.
Before Karen knew what was happening, the robe was torn off his body, revealing his pure white skin. The mortal looked on in horror at the 600-summer-old stab wound that first sent the frame into Hades.
You really are dead.
The thief stammered.
No one could deliver that kind of wound.
Really? Are you sure?
Karen slipped his fingers into the gaping hole and chuckled at both the ticklish sensation and the green pallor that came over the thief. As the large man fainted and fell to the ground, the ferryman picked up his robe and meandered out of the alley, laughing to himself.
You really are dead,
he mocked.
What is it with mortals? Try to tell them something simple like, I'm dead, and they just don't believe it. Soon they'll be saying that the world isn't flat either.
Zina and Gabrielle had been on the road less than a candlemark when they ran into trouble. Standing in the road before them was a behemoth of a man, seen as that's Virgilius, the walking wall. I killed him while I was in Callisto's body. She pulled Argo to a stop and waited for Gabrielle to dismount before stepping down herself.
Well, Zina, I see you get your body back. Shame it won't look so good much longer,
he said, swinging his mace menacingly. He leered at the bard.
What to say, little girl? Maybe once Zina's out of the way, you and me can have a little fun, huh?
He stroked his brown beard thoughtfully as he sighed up the small woman.
Yeah, I'd bet you'd be real fun.
He brought his attention back to the leather-clad warrior at the sound of her sword being drawn.
You gonna talk or fight, Virgilius?
She snarled, stepping forward and trolling her sword in her left hand. With his attention focused on her sword, he never noticed her right hand reaching for a shuriken until it was too late. With deadly accuracy, Zina released a round weapon, sending it across the distance in less than a blink of an eye. Virgilius could only look down at the brass and steel disc embedded in his neck. He looked at the warrior in surprise before falling helplessly to the ground.
One down,
Zina said unemotionally as she pulled her shuriken out of his neck and wiped it on his shirt. She mounted up and held out her arms to pull Gabrielle behind her. We better keep moving.
They're just going to keep coming, aren't they? The men you've killed, I mean. The bard said as she settled behind the tall woman.
I'm afraid so, Gabrielle. At least until we can find Karen and defeat Sisyphus. She urged Argo ahead.
Zina, can I ask you something?
The concerned tone made the warrior turn her seat and look at the bard.
How many men have you killed, roughly?
It was one of the things that Zina tried hard not to think about. Now forced to face her path, she found it even harder.
I don't know, Gabrielle. There were so many battles, so many towns that I razed to the ground. I don't know their names. Most I can't even remember their faces. There are those that I don't know if I killed or just wounded.
She turned back in the saddle to face forward, unable to meet her friend's innocent gaze.
Gabrielle, if this is too hard on you, then perhaps we should head for the Amazons. You'll be safe there until all this is over.
The innocents won't be after you, right? Only the ones sent to Tartarus?
She asked hopefully, unsure if she could deal with seeing the helpless people that had fallen to the former destroyer of nations.
Only the ones sentenced to Tartarus,
she reassured the bard.
Then I can handle it,
she said firmly, tightening a hold around the leather-covered waist.
The first thing is to find Karen,
Zina said, hoping to change the unpleasant subject. At the moment, I haven't a clue where to begin. She held up her hand in silent warning. Directly in front of them were a good 2,000 men, none of whom looked familiar to the warrior. There was no mistaking the look of hatred in their eyes.
I have a feeling it's going to be a long day,
she said as she removed the chakram from her belt. Gabrielle shifted so she could see what was going on ahead and silently agreed. By the time the battle was over, Zina was covered in blood and grime. The coppery smell filled her nostrils and flared feelings she had long thought dormant. She wiped the remnants of the skirmish from her sword. She felt the old anger surface. This particular group had been members of Cortese's army when Amphipolis was sacked. There was no mistaking his crest on their shirts. She had taken joy in killing them that first time, and found her feelings not so much different now. She used her boot to roll over several of the dead men, but didn't find one that she had been looking for. She double-checked the group. No, the man that killed Lysias wasn't among them. Now he would have been someone she wouldn't have mind running through with the sword again. She pressed the tip of her sword against the chest of one of the dead men, impressed as though she thought about the man that had murdered her brother. Without realizing it, a feral grin formed on her face, and the sword impaled the corpse. Yes, it would feel so good to kill him again,
to exact revenge for her brother once more. She pressed harder, sending a sword through the corpse's back and into the blood-soaked earth beneath him. Her mind reeled with images of so long ago, of Lysias and her standing up to protect their homeland, of her first kill, his first kill, of the smile on his face just before the sword was run through his body. Anger filled Xena, filled her as much as it had on the fateful day, and all she could see was death. Her sword twisted within the dead man's chest. Xena. A gentle touch on her shoulder brought the worry out of her musings and back to reality. It's over. They're all dead.
It's not over, Gabrielle. This is just the beginning,
she said solemnly, her features betraying nothing of her emotions. She pulled her sword free and returned it to her scabbard, not bothering to remove the blood from the blade. The bard noted the odd action but said nothing. As the day wore on, Gabrielle became more disconcerted about Xena. Hardly any words passed between them, and the two additional fights had gotten to only served to make the bard more concerned. Xena's movements were calculated, vicious, her goal only to kill and kill quickly. While she understood the purpose behind the warrior's actions, she was still worried about the change in her friend. While riding, Xena sat up straight. The hand that usually rested over the bard's was now planted firmly in her chakram. There was an emptiness to the warrior's blue eyes, a coldness that Gabrielle had only seen once before, when they were fighting the Horde. It was only when the bard made the connection between that and Xena's current actions did she understand what was going on.
Xena, stop.
We have to keep moving, Gabrielle. We'll stop later.
No, stop now,
she said urgently, reaching forward with her hands to grab the reins. Xena scowled at the bard's attempt to take control and felt her anger rise. She pulled Argo to a stop and dismounted, practically jerking the young woman down with her.
What is the problem?
Xena asked, her tone clearly conveying her annoyance.
This is,
the bard replied, holding out her hands to indicate the two of them.
Xena, listen to how you're talking to me. Have I done something to make you so upset?
I'm not upset, Gabrielle. Don't you understand that we have untold numbers of people chasing us? We don't have time for heart-to-heart chats right now.
I'm not asking for a heart-to-heart, Xena. I'm asking you to see what's going on. You're acting like the Xena that you used to be, not the Xena I know and love. What were you thinking about when you were standing over the dead man?
I was thinking about how to keep us alive, Gabrielle. That's what I do. You tell stories and I keep us from getting killed. That's how it works. If you can't understand that...
I understand that you weren't here, Xena. You're facing people we've killed before. When you faced those men, you weren't standing in the middle of the road protecting us. You were back in Amphipolis. I saw it in your eyes.
She took a step closer and put her hand on the warrior's forearm.
Xena,
she spoke softly, trying to diffuse the tension she felt in the muscles under her fingers.
I know these men were part of your past, but you need to remember that we're here, in the present. You're not the person you once were. You've battled the demons and found the goodness in your soul. If you don't keep yourself focused on that, you'll slip back to what you once were.
Gabrielle, I...
No.
She put her finger to Xena's lips to silence her.
You've worked too hard to let this take you back. You need to fight the darkness. I'm here to help you, and I will do everything I can to remind you of how much you've changed. I'm not the enemy, and I'm not one of your lieutenants. Don't shut me out.
Xena looked down at her, dumbfounded.
Is that what I'm doing?
She asked guiltily.
That's exactly what you're doing,
Gabrielle said.
I think that all this looking around for people bent on attacking you is starting to get to us.
The warrior nodded in agreement.
So let's make a deal here. We've lost our bedrolls and the rest of our gear, so I suggest that a night's stay in a nice warm inn is in order.
Oh, you do, huh?
Xena let the corner of her lip turn up in amusement.
Yes, I do,
the bard replied.
Just think how a nice hot bath and clean sheets would feel.
Do we have enough for port with dinner?
For you?
Gabrielle grinned.
I'm sure we could spare enough for a few mugs of port.
Xena allowed herself to be tugged by the now happy bard.
Come on. Gradius is just a few leagues down the road. I'm sure we'll find a nice place to stay there.
Ah, this is the life,
Charon said as he drained his mug of port. The dancing girls had caused his long-dead heart to pound with violently in his chest, and he had taken great delight in sampling every type of ale and port in the Terran's vast inventory. Now feeling quite giddy and warm, the ferryman couldn't think of one reason to return to the underworld.
Hades can find someone else to shuttle the souls across the Styx. I quit,
he said proudly, turning his empty mug upside down to try and pull one last drop out.
Barkeep, where's my refill? This isn't the Ritz, you know. There aren't that many people to wait on.
A young woman brought over a tray with a fresh mug of port for the odd-looking and quite mouthy man.
Thanks for bringing it before I aged again,
he said, taking a long swallow. As the woman turned to leave, Karen reached out and grabbed the handful of soft butt, causing the servant girl to yelp and almost drop her tray.
Nice package, Toots.
He cackled.
You know, I've got a few dinars, and you smell better than the last girl I knew. Of course, she'd been dead for a few days.
He puckered his black lips.
Give me a taste and maybe I'll buy the dessert.
This time the servant girl threw her tray up in the air and ran away screaming.
Nah, too young anyway. The excitement of being with me would have been too much.
He took another swallow of his port.
Bring on the dancing girls,
he yelled, pounding on the table.
Psst. Hey, old man.
A sleazy-looking man at the next table whispered as he leaned closer to the ferryman.
Looking for some action? Well, you're not exactly my type, but after all this time, who am I to complain?
Sharon replied, parking his dark lips again.
No, not that way, you pervert,
the sleazy man said.
I mean, are you interested in some real action? You know, dice, cards, cockfights, that kind of thing. I know a place nearby where you can gamble the night away so long as your dinars hold out. Are there Scantlin clan women there?
The ferryman asked, rubbing his hands together joyfully.
More than you can count. Well, now.
Karen upended his mark and drained the content.
What are we waiting for?
To be continued.
Well, that concludes Chapter 1 of Karen's Troubles by B.L. Miller. We want to take this time out once again to thank B.L. Miller for her permission to use her story on our show. And as usual, there'll be a link on my show notes so that you can actually read her, go to her site and read the story with me, or read ahead and, or read some of the other stories that she has there, which are quite a numerous ones, and they're all quite good. So once again, that's Karen's Troubles. Now, if you have any ideas for song snippets, book recommendations, movie recommendations, announcements, shout-outs, or just want to say hi, or even a recipe or two that you might throw my way, send them to xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care and enjoy life. Bye-bye.